Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's April 5th, 1242, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
What do you get when you match up 2,000 Catholic crusaders against 6,000 Orthodox Christians on a frozen lake in Russia in the middle of winter?
A new Saturday Night TV format.
Yeah, set up for a really inappropriate joke. Well, for one thing, you get a huge and bloody battle, but you also get a legend, particularly if you are Russian, which is what the Battle on Ice, also known as the Battle of Lake Peipus, has become ever since it was fought today in history in 1242.
Well, I mean, if it does come to ITV as a series, it's already got a title because in Russian it's known as The Massacre on the Ice, which I think would be a great sequel to Dancing on Ice. And it's also a very fair description of the moment that the Russian hero, Prince Alexander Nevsky's army, descended on their enemy. And the battle had begun at sunrise when one of Nevsky's sentries spotted the approach of the Teutonic Knights. We'll get on to that. What happened next is not entirely clear because there are lots of contradictory sources and chronicles, but some sources suggest that Nevsky's army lay in wait and ambushed the enemy flanks, others that they first engaged the invading force on the ice with a flurry of arrows and then released hidden cavalry, again, onto their flanks. In any case, their flanks were pinned in, the enemy were forced across the frozen lake. When Nevsky's forces really set about them, the chronicle, The Life of Alexander Nevsky, describes it thusly: it was an unprecedentedly fierce battle. The crack of breaking spears, the sounds of clashing swords and axes filled the air. Blood soon covered the battlefield and red streams began to flow over the ice. The ice could not be seen, for it was covered with a weight of blood.
Yes. I mean, basically, the too long don't read moral here is don't fight Russians on a frozen lake because they are going to win. But the time of year, here we are in April, is crucial in this story because, yeah, it's spring, but it's not yet summer, i.e. the rivers are still frozen over. The paths are still accessible. You can get over streams and lakes. But it's no longer winter either. It is bearable to move men around the Russian countryside without too many of them dying just from the elements. But we'll get to all that. Let's first, as Rebecca parked, describe who the German Teutonic Knights were. Their full title was the Order of Brothers of the German House of St. Mary in Jerusalem. They were the German equivalents of the Knights Templar. They established Prussia, and they fancied a piece of Novgorod, which was the principality over which Alexander Nevsky was ruler.
Yeah, this incursion into Russia was one of a series of what were called the Northern Crusades, and the main target were the Baltic kingdoms, Lithuania, Latvia, etc., who were still largely pagan. In fact, the Teutonic Knights embarking on these so-called crusades were sometimes called summer warriors, because this was basically something a German noble could do in the holidays, unlike making the arduous journey to the Middle East to combat the heathens there.
Go have your blood run across the ice. What a great holiday that would be.
Lads on tour.
Yeah.
But hold on, pagans, you said they were Orthodox Christians.
To the Teutonic Order, the Orthodox Christians of Russia were no better than pagans or the Muslims in the Middle East. In fact, they were almost worse because they were heretics rather than merely ignorant. They weren't people who just needed to be shown the word of Jesus Christ. They had already seen it and they turned it into something different. And that was even worse, if you like, than being a pagan. And of course, the Orthodox Christians in Russia felt the same way. Contemporary accounts refer to these invaders as godless Germans.
But the Teutonic Order by this stage were spread very thin because they'd actually taken on what remained of another order called the Sword Brethren in a sort of mergers and acquisitions kind of a fashion. And that led them with this really broad territory that they were trying to defend along a very lengthy border stretching from the Polish frontier to Lake Peipus in Russia. And this really set the stage for the conflict between the Teutonic Knights Soviets and then the quite long-suffering people of Russia who were already being buffeted from the other direction by the Mongols.
Yeah, so when the Teutonic Order invaded Novgorod in the autumn of 1240, they occupied several cities with their force, which was made up of German knights, the former sword brethren of Latvia, several hundred professional soldiers from Germany and Denmark, and about 1,000 Estonian foot soldiers whose status is a little bit ambivalent. They possibly were conscripted into being there. But Nevsky wasn't actually there when this happened because the aristocracy had forced him into exile. So it was this point he was hurriedly recalled and asked to assemble an army. It numbered around 6,000 in the end, so they did outnumber the invaders. But in order to, you know, keep the heroic element alive, Russian accounts have tended to emphasize them as a ragtag army, you know, of God-fearing, patriotic peasants ready to lay down their lives for the heroic Prince Alexander Nevsky and for the church. Nevsky and his brother Andrei were at the head of the army, and they had already driven the Teutonic occupiers out of the city of Pskov at this point when they sort of massed at Lake Peipus in an attempt to draw the enemy out and finally confront them on the ice.
Or possibly actually just on the bit before the ice.
On the really cold, frosty ground.
Yeah, because one of the accounts that I saw, which makes sense, is that the tactic was exhaust the enemy, be defensive, get them really tired, but of course you know the territory better and you've got more men, then seemingly retreat, but actually drag the enemy to the shore, then you can face the attacking enemy as it stumbles to cross the ice.
Mm.
Yeah, the kind of entwining of military and religious pride encapsulated in this battle has made it loom far larger in the Russian imagination than the actual action would warrant. You know, it's one of the battles that form the legacy of Alexander Nevsky as a Russian hero, although Russia as a state didn't exist at the time. You know, he'd guided the country through this troubled period, first driving out the Swedish invaders, managing to keep the Mongols at bay, and then defending the Orthodox Church. You know, he began to be venerated immediately after his death, and he was canonized as an Orthodox saint in 1547. His relics have attracted pilgrims for centuries. And there was, of course, also the movie Alexander Nevsky by Sergei Eisenstein, released in 1938, whose final half hour depicts the battle on Lake Peipus. It was a not-so-subtle allegory for Nazi Germany.
Commissioned by Stalin personally, that film.
Mm.
Yeah, and appropriately for the Stalinist era, it really minimises the role of religion on Nevsky's side. You know, it portrays him more as almost like a folk hero. They really minimise his status as defender of the Orthodox Church,
yeah,
and play up the evil Catholic side. The German bishop in the film actually wears a mitre decorated with swastikas. It's not the most subtle allegory.
Mm. And this is where we get a lot of the imagery of soldiers trapped beneath the ice and dying. But Eisenstein said in interviews that he actually got his imagery for that from Paradise Lost, which is incredible when you consider how totemic it is for Russians when they think of this incident. And, you know, it's not surprising that they play down the religious war, because the religious war, as we've said before, when we talk about Christians fighting each other, it's actually so thin, isn't it? When you're actually talking about the theology of what they're fighting about, it's, should our priests have beards? Do we want our churches to have benches? Shall we make the sign of the cross with three fingers or five? That's what hundreds of people are dying for. But, of course, it's really about political power. It's not about theology at all. It's about, do we want to be governed from Rome?
Yeah, I mean, Alexander himself rode home in triumph with a bunch of money and lots of horses and armour and plenty of prisoners as well. But at this stage, you know, he was kind of pondering his future, even in triumph, because even though, yes, he'd had this major victory over the other version of Christianity, the Mongols remained an incredible threat to the East, and Alexander really spent the rest of his days trying to keep a peace of sorts with the Mongols just to preserve Novgorod. As for the Teutonic Order, the knights just basically were like, yeah, whatever, let's keep crusading, and continued to find new enemies to fight. They were regarded as having a sort of unrestrained arrogance, even despite this defeat at Lake Peipus, which some people have said shows their sort of broad hubris, and others have said displays the fact that actually this wasn't maybe as big a battle as the later Russian propaganda likes to suggest.
Although that might have been part of the political calculation of Nevsky as well. You know, we can call it a massacre, but actually we're going to let them go over the hill again, which he did.
Right.
He let a lot of them ride off because he wanted a lasting peace. They didn't come and have another crack at Novgorod again.
Yeah, exactly. And there are definitely reasons why you don't want to poke that particular bear. But for the Teutonic Order, they didn't seem to learn very much. You know, thousands of knights would be killed at battles that they instigated in Poland and in Lithuania. And the Teutonic Order, from those battles, never really totally recovered its former glory. They didn't understand really when they were beaten.
Yeah, and also they didn't know how to quit when they had Christianized everywhere. You know, this ended the order's attempts to destroy the Orthodox Church and forcibly convert the Slavic Christians to Catholicism. From that point onwards, they focused on Christianizing the holdout pagan states of Europe. But the last one was Lithuania, which formally adopted Christianity in 1387. And you might think this would be a perfect moment to say, job done, freeze frame, what did the Teutonic Knights go on to do afterwards? But they didn't. They carried on, you know, till they finally bit off more than they could chew by taking on the Kingdom of Poland and the Grand Duchy of Lithuania, again, both Christian states by this point. And they were defeated at the Battle of Grunwald in 1410. That was one of the largest battles of the medieval era and finally destroyed the order that probably should have destroyed itself several decades before at that point.
So to reiterate, don't fight Russians on a frozen lake because they are going to win.
And so another week of retrospecting ends. But next week begins a day early at Club Retrospectors. Join us now to get an exclusive episode every Sunday. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.